91.5 WMFO Medford.
Hey guys, it's Brian Young of A Crash Course for the Ravers.
It's a crash course for the Ravers.
Where we play deep cuts, lost classics, live tracks, your requests, and plenty of local rock sprinkled throughout. I'm joined by my beautiful co-host, Marie Michelle.
That's me.
1 to 4 p.m. Saturdays. Don't miss it on 91.5 WMFO in Medford.
You gotta have home.
homes. Yeah, you gotta have you got it. Yeah. You gotta have hands. You gotta have horns. You gotta have heart.
This whole cliche about the French loving Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went to go see some terribly pretentious arty Czechoslovakian film.
Yeah.
With Faye Dunaway, who was really bad.
In a Czech film?
And Czech director, but the American stars.
Oh, I see.
They have, what's his name? Is it Matt Dillon or someone like that was in it? And Jerry Lewis was in it.
Really?
Yeah. And this is right on the Champs-Élysées, whatever the heck it's called, there by the. The arch there of triumph. On the main drag there in Paris. I went with a representative of my French record company.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to take in a movie after dinner. And we said, let's go see this thing with Faye Dunaway and all these American stars. And he said, it's supposed to be very good. And Jerry Lewis is in it. And I said, I know, we really want to go see a Jerry Lewis film in France to see what happens. And he said, that's all. He used to be big in France. He was really trying to downplay the whole cliche.
Yeah.
He's not real. That's like an old wives' tale sort of thing. And Saturday night, packed. We couldn't even sit together because it was so packed. He sat in another part of the theater and let me sit with my girlfriend, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Lewis, who was not that great in this not that great film,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was trying,
mm-hmm.
but they were rolling on the floor at like every like it was.
He just had the wave. He just had the wave, and they would fall.
It was unbelievable. They were like laughing and roaring. And I once saw Dave Thomas at a catering table. We were both having our dinner after both of our sound checks, and. We had artificial crab legs, legs, as I recall.
Very nice, artificial crab legs.
What do they call those sea legs?
Things? Artificial crab legs, I thought.
Okay.
Rosette's crab.
Okay. But then we were, having dessert. Apple cobbler, this was the southern part of the United States.
Norfolk Beach.
Yes, Norfolk Beach, exactly.
I remember.
Good memory. And
that's where they segregate off with a wire fence. Like the below 18s and above 18s, but go
yes,
ahead.
Yes, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Wow, it's all coming
burned
back to
into
me
my
now.
Mind. You have such a young audience; it frightens me. Go ahead.
The dessert time. There was some red sauce
mm-hmm.
on the table, not a Tabasco, which can be very spicy, but. A much milder, more vinegar, less pepper,
mm-hmm.
kind of a Louisiana hot sauce, which mm-hmm. you could, someone like myself or David who appreciates hot food, this is nothing. I mean, it's good.
Drink this for breakfast.
Yeah, it's nothing. But still, it's stuff made of vinegar, salt, and peppers.
Mm, yeah.
And I saw Dave, without even looking, like reach over and grab this bottle of red sauce and began dumping it, in large squirts all over his apple cobbler.
Well, it's good, wasn't it?
Exactly. That's what I'm getting to. I said, do you always like do that to your like apple cobbler dessert? And he said, no. He said, I've never had it like this before. And in between bites, he explained to me that, a red sauce pretty much works on anything.
Yeah.
And then, so I reached for the bottle of red sauce, dumped it all over my apple cobbler, and lo and behold, it was delicious.
Good.
It was delicious.
It was good.
I couldn't believe it. And then Then all the roadies,
yeah, they always
get around the table. Yeah. They started doing it. And then it was, you know,
mayhem.
It was everyone thought it was delicious though. It was quite a rock moment.
Simon?
Hmm?
You like Jack Nishy?
Not sure.
That's who we were just listening to. He did a lot of like stuff, ton of stuff, but one thing he was known for is Jack Nishy. Nishy? I think that's the way you pronounce it. One thing he was known for is, like, he did a lot of the music for those old movies and stuff. I'll have to look it up, but that's The Last Race, and it was, like, Attack of the 50-foot-tall Woman.
Hey. I'm glad you brought that up. This is one of my pet movie peeves. Let me just turn up the headphones. You know, I recently saw, for the first time, the entire version from beginning to end, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Really? Oh, my God. I've never seen it. I just was like thinking of any old 50s movie.
Well, she's 50 feet tall,
yeah.
And she's a villainess, and in the end, she gets her just desserts, and you've got this 50-foot corpse, just this dead 50-foot woman.
Wait a minute. How long ago was this that he watched this?
I don't know. Pre-post-COVID, who can keep time of anymore?
All right. I thought you, like, you just watched it. I'm like, it's synchronicity again. But never mind.
All right. So how come they never made the obvious sequel, Funeral of the 50-foot-tall Woman? I mean, what do you do with a 50-foot dead woman?
You have her fight Godzilla.
But she's dead. She's dead at the end.
Yeah, right. Well, she comes back as a zombie.
Maybe. Magic of
Attack of the 50-foot mummy.
The 50-foot woman returns.
Sounds awesome. So this is Simon Ritt I'm speaking with on 91.5 WMFO in Medford. Simon's a dear friend of mine. Came with his good friend Jan.
Yeah.
You guys were never married, were you?
33 years, but no.
Are you married?
No.
No. Oh, you've been together 32 years, though.
33
years. Wow.
But we have a beautiful granddaughter, little Camille. So,
do you really?
Yeah, so it's all okay.
How many kids do you have?
Jan has, by a previous engagement, two boys, Josh and Mike, and they grew up as much with me as they did with their biological father, so we're pretty close.
Well, that's all cool stuff. What's very cool, too, is that Simon is from the Daughters, Two Saints, with Joe Mazzari.
Yep, and currently the Darlings, Country Rockers.
Right, the Darlings. You've been doing like shows at the Where Than Attic, right?
Yeah, we love that place. I guess I should give a plug. I know he's down here a lot. Our good friend, our mutual friend, Dan Anklund, Bootleg Dan, has been promoting some great shows there. And my partner from the Darlings, Kelly, and I did a little acoustic show there last week with Mike Younger, a great talent out of
Nashville. He's been here. He's performed for me here. Like last year he came around. It was awesome, yeah.
And I'd be neglecting to, I don't want to neglect to mention Linda and Danny from Girl with a Hawk were on that bill too, another great local band.
I think I might be seeing them today. I think that's happening like right now. That is at the Porch in Medford. You know of the Porch?
Yeah, we've been there a couple times.
I've never been there. I heard it's closing. So Kirsten from Something About the Woman just told me that. I've never even been there. But I'm going to go check it out because Diablo Gato's throwing some thing there with the Dogmatics and Girl with a Hawk. Happening right now.
Well,
so I think it goes till 6 o'clock, so I'll watch a couple hours of it.
If you order a martini, make sure they serve it to you in a glass and not a damn paper cup like they did with Jan. $13 for a martini, no olive.
$13?
$13 for a martini with a in a plastic cup like you'd pay $6 for at a VFW.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
they...
He didn't even drink, and he said, take this back.
Jan, you why don't you get over here so we hear you?
No, I'm fine.
You know... you can't hear her off mic, probably. That's my better half, Jan Collins. And you might ask yourself, what does Jan have to do with Johnny Thunders? And I'd like to just inform the public. This is, I think, a fascinating bit of her history. But Jan is perhaps the only person who ever, as a salesperson at Trash and Vaudeville, on different occasions, sold shoes both to Johnny Thunders and to Keith Richards.
No kidding!
My claim.
You touched their feet! I would kiss their feet!
The funny thing is that when Johnny...
Jan, get on mic.
Get over here! Come on! There's a mic for you right over here. Come around. It's Jan Collins, everybody. I used to have a clap machine. I got to get another one.
An applause machine.
Yeah, applause machine. I had one. Yeah, we got an audience. What are you guys doing?
Oh, jeez.
Double star.
I guess before he gets started, I can tell my Johnny story.
Yes, get right up to the mic there. Pull it towards you.
He came into Trash one day. And
You worked for Trash in Vaudeville.
Oh, I did, yeah.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Yes. So New York City.
Yep. St. Mark's, 1980 to 1981. Mm-hmm. So it was like
great store.
Every band that came to town, England, anywhere.
I think they may have moved, but the one the one I went to, right across the street, was the Physical Graffiti building. You know, on the cover of Physical Graffiti, and also if you see the Stones waiting for a friend on
end of the block. Yeah,
yeah, that was filmed there too. It was like I was looking at it, going, "I know that building," and I looked it up and everything. Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Okay, so Johnny comes in. He just like you know the shoe department was in the back of the store, so Johnny comes walking in, and he wanted new Converse. He had on the most rancid high tops, Johnny, I've ever seen. So one of us went and got him the sneakers. And he put them on, and I'm fairly certain, because I kind of watched him walking out.
So you didn't want to touch those feet.
He just walked out and didn't pay for them, but he left.
Did he have an entourage at all?
No, just him.
Yeah.
But he left his sneakers on the floor, the ones he took off.
Oh, he figured he was just
and
trading them.
They looked... like they were going to walk away. I mean, they They looked alive. They looked like they
and I would have cherished them. You probably burnt them.
No, listen, this is what we did. There was me and three of the guys that worked there, and we were all standing in a circle around the sneakers. And one of us said, gee, how much do you think we could get for him out on the street?
Yeah, was he famous at this point?
Oh, way. Yeah, I mean, it was 1980. It was after the Heartbreakers.
And Dolls, of course, yes.
Absolutely. So we're all kind of debating how much we could get for them, you know, took them out on the street, and probably a lot. But we looked at him, and he said, I'm not going to touch him. And somebody else said, I'm not going to touch him. So they went and got a shovel. A shovel? Oh, yeah. Nobody would touch them because they were... I can't even tell you how disgusting they... I mean, they were...
Rank.
Yeah. Filthy, you know. I mean, right. Think about...
Yeah, where has he been with those?
Yeah,
right.
Ding dong.
Probably sleeping in a dumpster.
So anyway, that's my Johnny story.
That is fantastic.
You should let him talk now.
Thank you, Jen Collins. Yeah, so the reason why we have Simon Ritt in is to pay tribute to Johnny Thunders, and his birthday is this Tuesday, the 15th. And I guess we're doing this at like an annual thing.
Yeah,
I was looking back. You started this in 2017.
Yeah, I don't think we coincided it with his birthday yet.
But I don't think we've... Yeah, we haven't done it every year anyway.
And then last year... I'm going to try to mention as many of my friends who are listening as possible. And it was our good friend Rachel Lieberman, who's also been my partner on some of my very homemade videos that I've made. And Rachel's birthday is the day after Johnny's. You know, I love Johnny Thunders, but I'm not the kind of person who remembers, you know, my favorite rock star's birthdays. I can barely remember the birthdays of my family.
I do for this one because I've been to New York like at least three times for the Johnny Thunders birthday bash, which is always a blast down in New York City. You know, everyone doing Thunder songs, semi-famous guys, you know. Pretty cool. I saw Lenny Kaye doing Arms Around a Memory. That was pretty damn cool from the Patti Smith group. Got to meet him, too. Shook his hand. That was cool. Simon, famous in his own right, was in the Daughters. I guess whenever Johnny would... come up to Boston, the Daughters would open, and when he was missing players, you guys would just sit in sometimes.
Yeah, you sure didn't know what you were getting into. No two shows, you know, Johnny Thunders was like a snowflake. No two shows were the same. No 2 days with him were the same. Very, you know, it wasn't until Jan and I started spending some time with many years after Johnny, we were spending time with Lucinda Williams, a great artist, but like real up or down. And it was through Jan that I learned the term mercurial. Like, and I realized all these years, you know, she was applying it to Lucinda, and I said, and it was like, I didn't know that word back in the 80s, but that's what Johnny was, mercurial, you know, up and down, left and right.
And, fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic times. We started the band in the summer of 1980. It's a funny thing. I moved here July 3rd, 1980 to join the Daughters. They'd already been poking around the North Shore.
Where were you coming from?
I was coming from Florida, and I was filling the drummer's vacancy that had originally been occupied.
That's right. You're originally a drummer, right?
Yes. Skin pounding. And then we had a manager, Jim Nestor, who passed away just about a year ago. And, you know, Joe and I... Joe Mazzari, I should mention, currently of 61 Ghosts.
Great band.
But yeah, an excellent band. And I just heard them on your show, I guess, a couple weeks ago.
They probably come once a year, yeah.
And we loved and worshipped all things Dolls. And there was a manager in Rhode Island, a booking agent named Bill Walsh. And it's not the basketball player. It was a different Bill Walsh.
Not the governor?
No, sir. And
that's Marty.
That's a different Walsh.
And Bill was ostensibly Johnny's manager at the time, which probably lasted... You know, I could probably name half a dozen people who were Johnny's manager, which meant it lasted anywhere from a few weeks to like a couple days, you know, and then they'd had enough. But we got Bill to put us on a gig opening for what was La Cosa Nostra then, was Johnny, Jerry Nolan on drums, and Kid Luigi on bass.
Which
and
basically means mafia, doesn't it?
La Cosa Nostra, our family, I think. Something like that. If we have any Italian-Americans
in the
audience.
But I think they're talking about mob stuff.
Yeah.
They, yeah.
You know, Johnny was a typical, maybe I shouldn't say this, but he was typical of, you know, the macho Italian American guy. And the
like Luigi. I met Luigi.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, Kid Luigi.
Luigi, babe. It's not Kid Luigi.
He's wicked like, hey, who the hell am I talking to here? How they know you?
So Joe Mazzari called us up one night and he goes, Sime, he said, I'm talking to this guy and he's trying to tell me that I never played with
Luigi
Johnny Thunders.
Scores, yeah.
Because I know everybody that Johnny played with. And he kept saying, who's this Luigi? And we finally put it together. Luigi. It was Luigi. It's not Kid Luigi. It's Luigi, yeah, Babe.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Kid Luigi.
No, Luigi Babe.
Luigi Babe. Okay. I just learned that.
Who actually is a very... I love Luigi.
Yeah. Oh. He's snappy, yeah, dresser.
Oh, God. Yeah, it doesn't get sharper than Luigi.
I met him. He was all dressed up. One of the Johnny Thunders badges. Right.
Very skilled photographer, too.
Oh,
I've,
yeah,
heard,
I've
never, yes,
seen,
yeah,
his photography.
I think I have seen some, yeah.
So that was the beginning of a 2-year relationship, opening for La Cosa Nostra. That was at Harpo's, 1981, July 3rd. The
Harpo's Ferry.
Nope, it was just called Harpo's. It was in Newport, Rhode Island.
Oh, okay. Different place.
Absolutely. Different state. And we played with Johnny in a lot of different configurations. I got to play gigs with all four Heartbreakers. I don't know if there's anyone who can say they've done that, because I played drums with Walter and Johnny, and I played drums with Billy and Johnny. And then there were some, just a couple of gigs, but they were a great experience. I had switched over to bass.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep going.
And Joe Mazzari and I did a couple gigs with Jerry Nolan, with obviously Jerry on the drums, and I was on bass at that point. And I'm not looking for metal or anything, but I'd be interested in knowing if anyone's ever done, besides myself, has filled those shoes with all four of them.
That is something, yeah, to say, Sime, for sure. Yeah. Actually, what I just wanted to break in and say, I didn't even mention what we were playing before, yeah, we started talking, was Johnny Thunders, my good friend, Billy Rath. I swear, we hung with each other every other day. I drove him everywhere. I used to drive him down to New Jersey to get his Suboxone because he wouldn't change doctors. And then, he'd buy a motel room for the night, and I'd stay with Billy. So I was quite close to him right up till he died. I was in the hospital with him and everything. And,
yeah.
But those two tracks we just played with Johnny Thunders, Billy Rath on bass, Sime Ritt on drums, right?
Right. Those are from the Living Room in Providence. That was a great club, too, the Living Room. I'm not sure when it's from, 1982-ish or 83-ish.
Living Room in Rhode Island.
Yeah, Living Room in Providence, Rhode Island. And I remember that you were a friend to Billy Rath when he really needed a friend. Those, yeah, were some tough, those last couple years were pretty tough. But, and I didn't know him as well as you, but I did spend time with him on a couple occasions. And he was quite frank about everything, but he never complained. Not to me. I never heard, and he had a lot to complain about, but he never expressed how rotten things were for him, how difficult things were for him. He was just a trooper, and he was also a bass player's bass player.
Let me say a couple words about Billy. It was weird. It was almost like synchronicity. I started getting really into Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, and then I just run into Billy Rath at the C-Note in Hull. Like, not during a show or anything. It was just a day like this, a hot summer day. I was on the beach and I had to get out of the sun. Went into the C-Note to have a beer, and Billy Rath is in there. It was amazing. We had an hour-long talk. I find out that he's living in my hometown of Scituate, and from then on, like, we just were inseparable, and I really, really loved the guy. The thing about Billy Rath, and it's not just me, I think anyone he's talking, he can make anyone he's talking to feel very special. And if it weren't for him, I wouldn't have never created a band. I actually bought a bass, which my bassist Pete from the Stigmatics. Now he's a thigh scraper bassist. Mm-hmm. He's playing my bass. I bought that bass because Billy Rath is going to teach me how to play bass. But then he got really sick, and he said, you should be a front man. You should be singing. Because he heard me sing a little. And then I went for it, you know? So I would have never had a band if it wasn't for Billy Rath.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Yep. So yeah, we're some kind of spawn of the Heartbreakers.
I only met him a couple of times, but he told Simon that I was va 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 voom.
You are va va voom, always, Jan.
Now let me ask you: did you, when you saw him in the C-Note, did you just recognize him from album covers? Like, I know who that is, or did you get to talking with him?
I hate to admit this, but I think Marie spotted him first. I was with Marie, and she goes, "Is that Billy Rath over there?" I went, "Holy effing crap!"
Because when we met him, it was our then drummer Keith. You know, Billy had been MIA for a long time. I mean, even Johnny and Walter...
Heartbreaker song, MIA.
Exactly. And even Johnny and Walter had no idea where he was. And our then drummer, Keith, was playing a pickup game of basketball at the YMCA downtown. And Billy was shooting hoops, and he recognized him right away. And Billy and Keith was like, hey, my name's Keith. I'm in a band. We play in The Daughters. We play with Johnny Thunders, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that really introduced, you know, Keith meeting Billy hipping him to what we were doing really got Billy back in the fold for a little while playing with Johnny again.
Oh, okay. Good. Great. At the end, he performed almost right up until he had to be hospitalized. I mean, he was performing, singing, and playing bass for the Street Pirates, Billy Rath's Street Pirates.
Saw them a couple times. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw fun, them at the
and
Rose
they were
Bud.
And they're fun. He was still a great bassist. His singing, I mean, you gotta love him. He's Billy Rath, you know. I mean, he could barely talk, but he insisted on singing these songs, and it was just wonderful. Yes, I loved it. What are you going to play for us today, Simon? Oh, by the way, I know I usually do the Boston Groupie News Report at, I guess these days, 2:30, but I will do it after, whenever we get done with...
With Johnny Thunders Day.
Yes.
A new tradition.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to keep it a little bit on the acoustic side, because that's what I do, and play a couple of my... favorite songs here for you by Johnny. This is one off of his classic So Alone album. I'm going to send this one out to our good friend Bobby Hall. I know he listens in LA via the internet, and he's going to be here in a couple weeks. And Bobby's a close friend of mine going back to my high school days. He was with me the first time we both went to see Johnny Thunders in New York City playing with Gang Wars. And Bobby was with the Daughters the first time we opened for Johnny Thunders at Harpo's in Newport, Rhode Island. And I was even remembering earlier today that Bobby was with me when we got to smoke pot with David Johansen on the David Johansen Winnebago they had. That was it was all decorated inside with covers from Club Magazine, which was like a third-rate, you know, men's magazine.
Porno.
Yeah.
Softcore.
Ah, classy. They probably thought so.
Just give me a second. Just give me a second to tune here. You know, this humidity doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah, least, you know, I get the AC guitars. On 60, but it doesn't feel like it. Nah, it's humid in here.
So this is one, anyways. I'm thinking of Bobby and send this out to him, and we're looking forward to seeing him in a little while. Can't close my eyes when she's around. My heart starts a pumping. I'm lost and then I'm found. It's getting so hot in here. Oh, I gotta let you know. 'Cause you make me crazy. If I only let you, 'cause now she's so untouchable. She makes me uncontrollable. if only she knew how I really felt. Maybe things would work out. Maybe I'll find out. But maybe my head's in the clouds and I don't even know. 'Cause she's so pretty, oh. She knocks the boys out 'cause now she's so untouchable. She's so untouchable. She's so untouchable, but I can touch. She's so untouchable. She's so untouchable. She's so untouchable. But what can I say? It's been a long day. Some girls may walk on by. I don't think I'll look anyway. Some boys may beg like a dog. Some girls are big, hey, bet too. But what can I say? But bon voyage, baby, 'cause now she's so untouchable. She's so untouchable. She's so untouchable. She's so untouchable.
Woo!
Oh, thank you very much.
Simon Ritt doing Simon Ritt doing thunders. 91.5 WMFO. Magic.
So, you got any other Johnny Thunder stuff?
Oh, I got tons.
You know what?
You need a break?
Yeah, well, just while I make some adjustments, can you, you got that big list there. Can you get Private World on there?
Oh,
by the Dolls?
Certainly.
Because this is a sad anniversary, but we should mention it. I don't usually keep track of these kind of morbid anniversaries, but it was 20 years ago today that we lost Arthur Kane, the great Killer Kane.
Right.
And I only got to meet Arthur once. And
you're lucky.
I was, because I was expecting a nutcase. I mean, I'd heard the stories, I read the stories.
And he was a librarian for a while.
And I got to tell you, he was like one of the nicest, most accessible, down-to-earth people.
Could he have a good conversation?
We did, and he found out I was a bass player, and he was like, oh, check out my bass. He had like this... What was it? The Mosrite Ventures model bass.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah, and he was, you know, I just got this. What do you think of it? And I'm really glad I got to meet him. And I don't care what anybody says about him or whatever I've read about him. I just thought he was a really sweet guy, actually. So I know Private World is a...
And no one else can wear tutu like him.
No, and also...
There you go.
He's sort of, maybe he's not always the first New York doll that comes to the forefront when you're thinking of the band.
He was just so tall. I mean, how tall was that guy?
But he was really the catalyst for that. Well, yeah. He was the guy who said, let's put together a band. And I, you know, had the idea for this.
Really?
You know, this.
With Actress. He came from Actress.
Right. And he was the catalyst. He was the, you know, got Johnny down, got David Joe down, and, you know, bit by bit put it together.
Right.
So I thought it might be nice to play Arthur's Private World, which is a great little song.
He wrote this?
Yeah.
All right. Get down!
not all those punks in London.
WMFO. I'm just waiting for that to queue up. I don't know what's going on with number six here. But that London Boys. Go ahead, Simon.
Sure. That was a very unrehearsed version of London Boys. Walter Lure on guitar and vocals, myself on drums, and once again Joe Mazzari on bass. That was from a gig in Raleigh, North Carolina, back in something we called the early 1980s, a place called The Pier. And it didn't happen a lot, but there were a couple times when Johnny was a no-show, and that was one of the instances. And we were literally, not me, because I was the drummer, I knew the stuff already, but Walter was literally showing Joe Mazzari songs in the dressing room before we went on stage. And we pulled it together, too. The crowd loved us. We got an encore. There was all kinds of attention heaped on us. You know, just sometimes you didn't need Johnny to have a good time.
Walter was a good guy, too. I've partied with Walter.
I loved Walter. He was my favorite.
Walter was when we'd be around Johnny and sometimes Jerry and sometimes Billy and sometimes who knows what else, and it was just a sea of chaos. And Walter would be that little island of normalcy in the middle of it. And he wasn't always, you know, he could be a little, you know, sarcastic and snide. He was very intelligent. But he was always accessible. He was never, caustic or rude. And, I asked him a lot of questions over the years. And he was always very patient. Always... happy to answer what he could.
Mm-hmm. Let me see. You want me to see if this pipeline works? I don't know. It's saying number six, but like the track, it's acting very strange.
Let's see what happens.
Let me press. I'll just push play, as Steven Tyler says. 91.5 WMFO in Medford. It's not going. You got another song for us, Simon?
Sure. I'll do one.
Let me just turn this down and get it pops up in the middle of it now.
This is one I've always
stuck
liked.
In there, too. I hope you didn't weren't too fond. We'll get out it somehow. Go ahead.
This is another Heartbreaker song, and it's one I've never really played before, but I just thought it might be a nice departure. And the thing I like about this song, I've always liked about this song, it has just the slightest suggestion of kind of like a spaghetti western, you know, that kind of effect that soundtrack.
Not Sergio Leone, he directed Ennio Morricone.
Morricone,
yeah. Yes.
Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and for Fistful of Dollars, great soundtracks.
I love that, yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see if I do this any justice or not. And once again, I think I'm going to send this out to. I heard recently from an old friend of ours from back in those days, Justina Fitzpatrick. And when you think about Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers and their photos, you think about Roberta Bailey and Marcia Resnick. But there was a third photographer who never quite got the exposure that those women got, named Justina Fitzpatrick. And she took thousands of pictures of the Heartbreakers and of Johnny, and she ended up being a really good friend of ours, and it's always nice to hear from her. I know once again she's listening in the Big Apple via the magic of the interweb, and I think I'll send this out to Justina.
But hold on,
we're off
the 24th, because the show's it's almost 3 o'clock. I just want to make sure this gets on the archive. Go see Bad Mary, the Stigmatics, Double Star, and the Thigh Scrapers on Wednesday the 24th, upstairs, Middle East. I hope you guys are there,
too. Oh, we'll be there.
All right, great. All right, now hit it.
You can give me this, you can give me that, you can give me this, you can give me that. It's not enough. Money's so green, so casually seen. It don't bother me.